After a long moment, she released. The string snapped, and the arrow launched forward at an arc until it thumped into the target. Even from this distance, she could see that the arrow had struck close to the center of the target. She took a deep breath and steadied herself.
"Good heavens, girl, you're a great shot."
An aged man sat on a log nearby, watching her. She hadn't noticed him before he spoke. Most of his face was obscured by a hooded cloak, leaving only his wrinkled lips visible. In his hand he held a gnarled staff. A small smile graced Riley's lips at his compliment. She had always wanted to try archery in the real world, but never had the opportunity. She remembered posing the idea to her parents many years ago. They had explained that it was a silly hobby. They insisted she be a cheerleader or play a team sport. What sort of girl shot a bow for fun?
"Thank you," she said to the old man. "I didn't even notice you there."
The old man's wrinkled lips cracked into a smile.
"At my age, I move slowly. This at least affords me the benefit of walking quietly."
Riley almost chuckled at the old man's words, until she saw Alexion's gleaming outline behind him, his metallic form weaving its way throughout the camp. Her fleeting moment of cheer was quickly extinguished as the familiar, miserable despair twisted within her stomach. She could almost forget the feeling each time she practiced with her bow. The old man interrupted her thoughts as he observed her expression.
"You seem gloomy for such a pretty girl. Not that I blame you. These wretched woods could make anyone feel depressed."
When they had initially started the journey to the Twilight Throne, they had passed through sunny, thriving fields and rich green forests. As the journey continued, the plants withered and died. Now, leafless branches hung over the road like claws. Each day, the sun shined a little less due to the swiftly thickening cloud cover. Soon they would be forced to light torches and lanterns during the day to make their way forward.
"Yes, these woods are quite gloomy," she agreed distractedly,
her eyes following Alexion. The old man turned his head to follow her gaze and caught sight of Alexion.
"Our fearless leader is making his rounds."
He turned back to Riley and said,
"What do you think, girl? Does he have a chance against this undead city, or this traveler you all speak of? What was his name again? Jason?"
"I don't know,"
Riley murmured distractedly. Along with the other players, Riley had seen the system message when Lux was conquered. When she had seen the player's name, a strange feeling had welled up inside of her. It couldn't be the Jason she knew. There were likely millions of people who shared that name. Yet the unmistakable image of Jason's face had flashed in her mind's eye when she saw the notification. A flood of guilt accompanied the image. She couldn't believe that she had gone along with Alex's story. She shook her head to clear it. Regardless of who this player was, she was impressed that one person could conquer a city and stand alone against an army of players and NPCs. As the feeling of despair slithered and tightened in her stomach, she desperately wished that she had that kind of power.
"If only I had the strength to stand up to Alex," she thought bitterly.
She turned her attention back to the old man and discovered that the log now sat empty. The old man had disappeared. Jason stood in the middle of the graveyard Morgan had once called home. It was just south of the Twilight Throne, and now empty of the living. A heavy darkness hung over the area, and there was almost no sound, save the occasional chirp of insects. Jason could detect the smell of fresh dirt and grass. Onyx sat beside him, gazing with a bored expression at the gravestones and tombs that riddled the area. Jason was curious about his new summoning spell. He wanted to try it out and see the results. The graveyard had an ample supply of bones, and he figured that it would be a good place to test the new spell. He began the process of casting Custom Skeleton. His hands moved in a complicated series of gestures as his lips formed the words of a long-dead language. Instead of the typical ball of dark energy forming in the air, the world around him began to slow and took on an otherworldly cast. The effect was eerily similar to what the old man had done to him in the marketplace in Lux. He looked up as he cast. A bird seemed to hover in the air, its wings beating ever so slowly. As he completed the spell, the world nearly stopped. He looked around. He could now detect the faint blue outlines of bones throughout the graveyard. Onyx yawned and stretched. He jumped up onto a nearby gravestone and lay down to sleep. Jason eyed him quizzically. Why isn't Onyx affected by the time-slowing aspect of this spell? Shaking his head at this unexplained phenomenon, Jason turned his attention back to the spell. A semi-transparent control panel had appeared in front of him. It looked like some sort of graphical design program with floating translucent menus that hovered in the air in front of him. This program seemed to have a static number of usable pieces. He could see a complicated menu off to one side that listed all nearby bones by individual type, indicating a counter indicating how many of each type of bone were in the immediate area. As he skimmed through the menu, he noticed that there were options for creating whole humanoid extremities and for reconstructing many different complete skeletons. He figured that the complete skeletons must be the corpses that were buried in the graveyard. His guess was that the game also helped simplify the process of building a skeleton by providing prefabricated default extremities for people who hadn't taken multiple college anatomy or graphic design courses. Intrigued, he started fiddling with different combinations of bones. Nearly 2 hours later, his eyes were becoming bleary from staring at the graphical UI for such a long time. He now had a firm grasp of how the editing program worked and was reasonably competent at creating basic skeletal forms. He had quickly learned that the interface allowed him to manipulate all of the bones in the area without touching them. With a thought, he could organize and rearrange the nearby bones to form a skeleton in the air in front of him. Once he had the frame completed, he had to imbue the joints and skull with dark mana. This involved summoning pools of the substance in the air and attaching them to the joints, like some kind of unholy putty. From what he could tell, his dark mana operated as both the power source for the skeleton as a whole and served as its muscles and tendons. Once the skeleton was completed, the editor gave him the option to save the design and name it. After experimenting, he could see why Morgan thought that the spell had limited usefulness. Images of skeleton raptors and giant flying monstrosities of bone had flashed to his mind at one point. He imagined himself riding a bone dragon and had started getting excited. However, the problem was he didn't have the materials. It wasn't just a problem regarding the raw number of bones he would need, which was a lot, but he also needed bones of a certain shape and size. He couldn't exactly create a skeleton raptor using human bones. He would need the corpses of various animals, or he would need some way to mold the bones. He paused. Now that is an interesting thought. Can I mold the bones? Perhaps I could use raw dark mana to try shaving a bone while the editing program for the spell is still running. With a thought, he lifted a bone from the ground and set it to hover in front of him. He then drew in dark mana, as though he was about to add connections between the bones. However, instead of forming a pool of mana and attaching it to the bone, he imagined it forming a delicate blade in the air. The dark mana swiftly formed into a blade. Jason visualized the magical knife cutting the edge of the bone in a smooth arc. The result was unexpected. The damn thing actually worked. Not only that, but it gave him a new skill. New passive skill, bone crafting. Surprisingly, you actually figured out how to manipulate the summoning spell to create custom skeletons. In spite of everything people said about you, Your experimentation has enabled you to use the spell's editing tools to alter bones. Since you can't be trusted with magical knives, this skill allows the modification to be performed automatically through the summoning editor. Skill level, beginner level 1. Effect, access to bone modification in the skeleton editor. May currently alter the composition of a bone by 5%. I have to agree with the prompt this time. It is actually surprising that I figured this out. Jason gave out a shout of triumph in the nearly silent graveyard, and Onyx looked at him with an annoyed expression. He stuck out his tongue at the cat. It wasn't the sort of thing the future ruler of an undead city should do, but sometimes the cat could be really judgmental.
Wow, this is a cool skill.
If I level it up, I will be able to create some truly unique creatures. I could alter any bones that I have available and use them any way I want. Morgan must not have discovered this skill, or she wouldn't have given up on summoning skeletons so easily. The ability to alter bones, even slightly, gave Jason a lot more wiggle room to create new skeletons. However, the question was, what should he create? He scratched his head and considered for a moment what type of minion he would need in the upcoming battle. After he had overseen the training of the city's fledgling army and reviewed their low average level, it had quickly become apparent that they couldn't win against Alexion in a straight battle. He would need to adopt the same type of guerrilla tactics he had used in conquering the city. It's clear that I will need to take the fight to Alexion while they are still approaching the city. The aura of darkness would extend well past the city limits, causing Alexion's army to walk in perpetual darkness. It was unlikely that the players and NPCs had night vision, so their visibility would be limited. The players and NPCs would also be weakened by the large concentration of dark energy. What Jason needed to do was attack preemptively, using the darkness and stealth. He was already intimately familiar with the terrain around the city from poring over the maps. If he could whittle down Alexion's numbers, then the Twilight Throne might stand a chance. I might also be able to delay them for an extra day. Any time that I can buy the new army to train and get ready is worth it. He expected that the psychological aspect of the attack would work wonders. He hadn't forgotten the traumatic experience suffered by the beginning players when they had discovered the feral zombies that Jason had left at the training grounds. Now, most of the enemy army was comprised of NPCs, and they had only one digital life. If Jason could harass and demoralize the army before it made its way to the city, that might also help swing the odds in their favor. His current control limit was 40, and he had already summoned 28 minions. That meant he could raise 12 skeletons. They would need to be fast and designed for stealth for the type of fight he was visualizing. If they were also terrifying, that would be an added bonus. He was still limited to something that was humanoid in appearance, since he only had human bones to work with. He couldn't radically alter the bones just yet. Jason began experimenting with the editor, and a form slowly began to develop in the air before him. It was about the size of a 10-year-old child. It had a hunched posture, and Jason had used longer bones from the ribs to form its hands. Each finger was now much longer than normal and terminated in a viciously curved point. He added bladed bones to the elbows and bone spikes along the spine. Its feet were primarily humanoid, but the toes were elongated and sharpened. After playing with the editor for a bit, he discovered that he was also able to change the composition of the bones themselves, making them darker by mixing in small amounts of graveyard dirt. This turned the bones a dark gray, which would help camouflage the skeletons. Once the complete skeleton floated in front of him, Jason began adding dark magic to the joints. After a moment of experimenting, he realized that he could add the dark mana in varying amounts. A thought occurred to him, and he began adding extra dark mana to the joints. His theory was that the extra energy would act like additional cartilage and reduce bone grinding. It might also provide additional muscle, increasing strength and speed. It took several tests to get a product that worked well, but the result was more than a little scary. The extra layers of dark magic in the joints actually increased the creature's speed substantially. Jason confirmed that the dark magic held the bones together, acted as cartilage, and provided a substitute for muscles. The downside was that the extra layers of dark magic cost more mana. Each finished creature cost nearly 2,000 mana. After some time, 12 of his finished creations stood before him. They were naturally small, and their dark gray bodies were difficult to see in the darkness. They didn't need any gear with their natural claws. They were almost unnaturally quiet, quick, and limber. He also expected that their clawed hands and feet would allow them to easily climb trees and traverse almost any type of terrain. With Jason's current willpower, they were each level 66. The only downside to his creations was that they were exceedingly fragile. His inspection showed that they almost had less health than he did. Jason expected that they would likely crumble after a few well-placed blows. However, they were suitably terrifying and fast. He expected that if they caught an opponent unaware, they would kill him long before he was able to strike back. After thinking for a moment, he decided to call his creations the Night Children due to their small stature. The editor saved the design so that he could easily create more and make modifications. As he was working, he received several notifications. ×3 skill rank up, bone crafting. Skill level, beginner level 4. Effect, access to bone modification in the skeleton editor. May currently alter the composition of a bone by 8%. ×2 skill rank up, custom skeleton. Skill level, beginner level 3. Effect, you may raise a custom skeleton using nearby bones. The skeleton's level is calculated as the caster's level plus willpower divided by 74. As Jason reviewed the prompts that appeared before him, he noticed that the increase in the spell level of custom skeleton had slightly increased the level of the skeletons by decreasing the willpower per additional skeleton level. He imagined that if he were able to level the spell high enough, his skeletons would be pretty powerful, since they would be at a much higher level than he was. Even though most of his minions were not nearby, Jason decided to pull up his summoning information screen to review his current army. Summon information. Control limit 40. Lieutenant control limit 4. Zombie level cap 141. Skeleton level cap 66. Current zombies 28. Current skeletons 12. Current lieutenants 0. Type of summons 9 guards. 15 thieves, 1 fire mage, 1 ice mage, 2 dark mage, 12 night children. His small army was beginning to grow into a respectable strike force. He had maximized stealth and damage. The thieves and mages could both sneak, and his night children would likely be stealthy enough to avoid detection even without the sneak skill. He had outfitted all of his thieves with bows so that he could use them as ranged support. The guard zombies could act as a reserve force and be used to create kamikaze zombies if needed. Jason glanced around at the graveyard and noticed that time was still being slowed. He had left the skeleton editor enabled. As he closed the editor, time sped back up to a normal pace. He glanced at the clock. Only 2 hours of in-game time had passed, yet he felt that at least 6 hours had passed while he was playing around with the editor and designing the Night Children. Did the skeleton editor triple the time compression? That means that time runs 9 times faster in the editor than in the real world. How was my mind able to handle that level of time compression for such a long time? Did the CPSC really approve this game feature? His thoughts were interrupted by a pounding headache he felt coming on. His mind suddenly felt heavy and tired, in spite of the small amount of time that had actually passed. He staggered for a moment as a wave of dizziness washed over him. Onyx gazed at Jason with an anxious expression from atop a nearby gravestone, his tail twitching spasmodically. Jason petted Onyx, hoping to reassure the cat. He decided that he needed a short break. He would log off for a bit, and then regroup and start moving toward Alexion's army. In spite of the headache and weariness, Jason felt excited about the upcoming battle, and his eyes glowed with unholy energy as he surveyed his creations. It was almost time to bring the fight to Alexion. Chapter 26 Mended. Another day had passed in their trek towards the Twilight Throne, and the NPCs had begun their routine of setting camp for the night. Riley sat in front of a campfire, staring into the tumbling flames. The chaotic dance of orange and red was comforting. She hadn't felt much peace lately, but the solitary late-night campsites had become a relaxing sanctuary. Her moment of peace was rudely interrupted as a heavy hand landed on her shoulder. She turned and looked up to find Alexion staring down at her.
"I'm off to my tent to log out for the evening. I expect you to stay here until I return. That is, unless you would prefer to join me."
A leer curled his lips, and his dead eyes seemed to undress her. An involuntary shiver ran up Riley's spine. She turned back to the flames in front of her, trying to ignore the way her skin crawled.
"I'm fine where I am," she said quietly.
A cruel chuckle came from beside her.
"Well, in that case, you should stay clear of the kitchen tent in the NPC camp. I hear they just opened a keg."
Alexion laughed at his own joke and walked off towards his tent. Riley physically flinched at Alexion's words, and tears began to form in her eyes. She tried to take a few calming breaths, but the frustrated anger that overcame her made it nearly impossible.
"How could he be so cruel?" she thought. "How could anyone be that cruel?"
As she stared through blurry eyes at the flickering flames before her, she recounted the events that had led her to this miserable place. Riley had begun dating Alex a few weeks ago. She was reluctant at first, because she had heard whispers from her friends that he could be a bit heartless and even cruel. This surprised her. He had only been kind and considerate when he spoke with her. She began to think her friends were making up stories. Eventually, she had agreed to go on a date. It had been a splendid, excessive affair. Over the last few weeks, that all began to change. She started to notice moments when Alex's mask of kindness slipped. She could see something disturbing beneath the surface. At first she thought she just imagined it, but then the encounter in the cafeteria had happened. She didn't understand how he could attack Jason, someone who had always been so nice to her. That action alone would have been enough for her to end it. Yet it was Alex's dead eyes as he stood over Jason's prone form that had really scared her. That hadn't been mere bullying. That had been the look of someone who preyed on other people in a dispassionate, clinical fashion. The look of someone who would pull the wings off a butterfly to carefully examine how it thrashed. Horrified and angered by what she had seen, Riley immediately broke up with Alex. At least she tried to. That was when he told her that she should rethink her decision, that he had a video she wouldn't want anyone to see. He reminded her of a night they had attended a party together, and she had overindulged with the beer. She had never really drunk heavily before, and her memory of the evening was blurry and unfocused. She had demanded to see the video, thinking Alex was lying. His lips had ever so slowly crept into a cruel, knowing smirk as he had revealed snippets of the video. Those few flashes were enough for her face to flush with embarrassment. Riley's hands had moved to cover her eyes, as though she could hide from the recording he held in his hand. Shame settled in her stomach. What had shocked her the most was that Alex showed no hesitation or remorse as he blackmailed her. He didn't even seem upset that she had tried to break up with him. She couldn't forget his emotionless, almost bored eyes as he threatened her. It was as though he knew that she would capitulate. And she had. Sitting by the campfire, Riley recoiled from the memories that flashed through her mind, tears trickling down her cheeks. It made sense now. Of course he had known that she would break. He knew exactly what to expect when he plucked a butterfly's wings. He had plenty of practice. "I didn't do it for myself, though," she whispered miserably into the empty night around her. Or at least, not just for herself. While Riley cringed at the thought of the video being passed around school, the potential harm the video posed to her family's reputation was much worse. Her father made his money by selling self-help books. He was also a prominent public figure, and was perceived as a titan of moral integrity, which is what made his books so successful. A video of his drunken underage daughter would be the sort of thing that could severely damage his reputation. With this leverage, Alex forced her to keep up the charade of dating him and to play this game. He seemed to take great pleasure in watching the discomfort and pain it caused her to be around him. He had also made her support his story that Jason had attacked him in the cafeteria. She had resisted at first. Could she really do that to someone who had always been so nice to her, even if it was to protect herself and her family? She had finally caved. Riley figured that at most Jason would be suspended temporarily. The harm to her family seemed much greater. How could she have known he would be expelled? She would never have gone along with Alex's story if she had known what would happen to Jason. Yet what could she do now? It was hopeless. If she went to the administration after going along with Alex's story, he would likely break up with her and contrive some story about how she was trying to get back at him. Then he would release the video of her drunken antics. No one would believe her. She felt helpless. She was too weak to confront Alex or to protect herself. Too weak to tell the administration at Richmond what Alex had done. She couldn't even make herself tell her parents. Her mind boiled over with a strange medley of emotion. A cocktail of anger, shame, and guilt swirled in her mind as she scrambled to think of some way out of her situation. If only she were stronger. Her thoughts turned again to the Jason that had conquered Lux. If only she could be someone like that. Someone who could stand before an army without fear. Someone powerful. She knew she couldn't. She was only a weak, stupid girl who had played right into Alex's sadistic hands. Digital tears full of helplessness and frustration flowed freely down Riley's cheeks as she sat alone in front of the campfire. The flames continued to dance in front of her in a gleeful mockery of her pain. She knew she had to find a way out. After logging out, Jason was lying in his small room at Angie's house. He pulled the helmet off his head and looked around the Spartan room. He had no furniture, and his bed was a single mattress without a frame. At least he had a place to sleep and a roof over his head. Over the last couple days, he had discovered that his aunt was actually a pretty good roommate. Angie worked long hours at a biotech company and spent most of her time in the lab. The company was always intent on getting some project or another completed, so she was constantly in crisis mode. Being at the bottom of the corporate totem pole also meant that she got stuck with the crap work and long shifts. Despite all that, she still managed to stay relatively upbeat about it. Jason left his small room and made his way to the kitchen to make himself something to eat. It was a Saturday evening in the real world, and he had been playing AO almost constantly for the last week. It was a weekend, which meant the other players that were marching toward the Twilight Throne could afford to stay in-game for long periods of time. AO had drawn in a younger group of players. Most of them didn't have either work or school to interrupt them for the next 2 days. That had allowed them to keep up with the NPC army as it marched toward the Dark City. They're going to need to create some way to put your character on autopilot when you're outside the game. Otherwise, larger battles would be almost impossible to organize from a logistics standpoint. As he was making himself something to eat, ramen again, Jason pulled up the RogueNet website on his device. In particular, he was anxious to check the market to see if his sword had sold. He was elated when he discovered that the item had been purchased. After the bidding war had stopped, the purchase price settled at a whopping $6,700. The other items were still on the market, but he was hopeful that he could at least make another $1,000 or so when they sold. He was a little curious about the type of person who was willing and able to drop nearly $7,000 on a few strings of ones and zeros. Unfortunately, he couldn't see who had purchased the sword, since the name of the buyer wasn't publicly available. I guess it doesn't matter. That amount of money will give me nearly 3 months of living expenses, unless I encounter setbacks. I might even be able to spring for some furniture for my room, and higher bandwidth. Still riding high from the sale of the sword, he heard the door to the small bungalow open. His aunt walked in, looking tired from her day at work. Dark circles hung under her eyes, making her look drained and stressed. He expected she had started work incredibly early that morning. "Hi, Angie," Jason greeted. "I was just making myself something to eat. Would you like me to make you something?" Angie glanced over at Jason, and a smile lit up her weary face. "That would be lovely. I'm starving, and I didn't get a chance to eat at work today." Jason added an extra packet of ramen to the pot that was boiling on the stove. They certainly didn't live like kings. However, if he was honest, he felt more at peace here than he had in a long time. It was also nice to live with someone that remembered you were there and came home every once in a while. "How was your day?" Angie asked, as she set her bag on the counter and slumped wearily into one of the stools at the counter. "Not bad at all. I sold one of the items I found in AO. Let's just say I don't need to worry about rent for a couple of months." Jason grinned at Angie excitedly. Her eyebrows raised in surprise. "Really? Maybe I should give up biotech and become a professional gamer? That sounds like a cushy job." Jason chuckled. "I'm not certain I'm going to be able to keep it up or what I'm going to do in a couple months, but at least it takes a bit of the pressure off." He continued. "I also checked on my application for the Calvary School. They accepted me. I need to select my classes, but I can start on Monday." Angie nodded her head. "It's good that you went ahead and applied." She eyed him appraisingly as she spoke. "You seem to be in good spirits. I'm actually kind of surprised, what with the week you've had." She trailed off slightly at this last part and looked a bit embarrassed. Jason's smile faded. "I can't sit and sulk forever. Plus, the time compression from AO makes each real-world day seem like 3 days. For me, it's been a bit longer than you would think." "I suppose that makes sense." Angie paused for a moment, then continued. "Have you heard from your parents?" Jason's smile had now disappeared. "Actually, no. I expect that they need a few more days to cool off. I was going to call them early next week." He hesitated for a moment before continuing. "Regardless, I'm not going back to Richmond." "I guess I don't blame you," Angie said quietly. An awkward silence descended on the kitchen. After a few minutes passed, Jason couldn't take it anymore. He tried to break through the morose cloud that now hung over the room. "So, how was your day?" he asked Angie. "Ugh," she groaned. "Same old grind. They had me doing quality control on this new diagnostic test we are developing. I really don't know how this thing made it past development. I can only imagine the company's directors pushed it through because the budget couldn't handle any more development time." She looked sad for a moment. "You know what really sucks about it, though? These diagnostic tests we're developing will be used on living, breathing people. They aren't just statistics in a control study. Can you imagine being misdiagnosed for ovarian cancer?" Angie shook her head. "I just can't understand how some people can put money over the well-being of others.
It makes it hard sometimes to tell myself that I'm helping people when the higher-ups are making decisions solely based on how it affects the company's bottom line.
Jason really didn't know what to say. He had certainly experienced his fair share of abuse at the hands of the wealthy. It was as though a certain amount of money desensitized a person to the consequences of their actions.
I'm sorry, Angie. Maybe we could do something to take your mind off of it?
I have a few hours I can kill outside of the game before I need to start marching towards Alexion's army. Angie really looks like she could use a break.
Angie glanced over at Jason and grinned.
I suppose we could do something. Have you ever played any of the old console games they had back in the day?
What? You play video games? I didn't realize you were into that sort of thing.
Are you kidding? Angie replied. I've been playing games since before you were born. I don't have the money to buy the fancier equipment you kids use nowadays, but I still have a few old consoles in the living room.
That sounds awesome, Jason said.
Then he eyed her with a grin of his own.
That is, if you think your old woman reflexes can keep up.
His aunt laughed.
We'll see about that.
She headed into the living room to set up the game. Jason smiled as he finished cooking the ramen. He then poured the steaming noodles in two porcelain bowls he grabbed out of a nearby cabinet and made his way into the living room.
All right. Where is the victory seat in here? He asked as he entered the room.
Angie chuckled.
Hey now, you aren't going to be acting so cocky when I'm cleaning the floor with you.
Jason and Angie spent the next few hours playing some co-op games on an ancient console she had attached to the screen in her living room. In between games, they would eat ramen and joke about who had killed who in the last game. It was probably the first time in weeks that Jason felt genuinely happy. Eventually, Angie called it a night and headed back to her room. Jason could tell she was exhausted from working, but she had needed the downtime to relax a bit. To be honest, he had needed it too. Jason's device let out a ring that signaled an incoming call. He put in his earbud as he made his way back to his room and quietly shut the door.
Hello? Jason answered.
Hey, man, it's Frank. I saw you had actually logged off for once, so I figured I'd give you a call.
Oh, hey, Frank.
Yeah, I needed a break. The longer I play, the stranger it feels to come back to the land of the living.
Frank chuckled on the other end of the phone.
No kidding. The game has only been out for about a week now, and it feels like a month has passed already. This time compression is really something.
By the way, he continued, you sound good.
I mean, I didn't expect you to be sitting in your room crying all day, but you actually sound kind of happy.
It was Jason's turn to laugh.
I don't know if I would go that far, but I'm doing pretty well.
You know, ever since I started playing AO, I've just been feeling different.
No kidding. First you conquer a city, and now I hear you're about to take on an army. Wish I could be there.
Well, I'll keep my camera on for you.
I was going to send you the footage from Lux, but I figured you must have gotten the gist of what happened from the videos that were posted online.
Frank sounded a bit peeved when he spoke.
Yeah, yeah. That footage was okay, but you still owe me the real thing. There are large chunks of video missing from the stuff the players filmed in the market, like, how the hell did you transform a city?
Jason fumbled, trying to think of an appropriate answer. He didn't want to lie to his friend, but he had a feeling the old man wouldn't appreciate him running his mouth. So he tried for humor, hoping to disarm Frank's questions.
That's actually proprietary information. I'm not sure you have the appropriate clearances and such.
A long silence followed.
Really? Frank finally asked. I can see your sense of humor didn't survive your expulsion.
Ugh, that was a terrible joke. Maybe I've been spending too much time with Jerry.
Jason replied, Hey, low blow with the expulsion crack.
Anyway,
I was actually just about to log back in. I have a ton of work to do to prepare for the upcoming battle.
No doubt. Assuming you survive this fight, I may need to head over to the Twilight Throne and see the place for myself. I have to say I'm curious.
Frank continued,
Oh, by the way, I was actually calling you regarding Alexion's army. I have some juicy information that you're going to love.
Jason was intrigued.
Really? What is it?
Frank laughed.
Maybe you should check the RogueNet forums. There is a post right now that has a ton of hits called The Endless March.
Jason promptly pulled up the RogueNet forums on his device and found the post Frank had mentioned. He just stared at his device with his mouth open.
Is this real? Jason finally asked.
A laugh resounded on the other end of the phone.
Hey, I don't know. Apparently Alex isn't focused on strategy. Maybe he thinks you're just going to roll over and hand him the city.
Could Alex really be this stupid? Could the other players?
Members of Alex's army were posting pictures, video clips, and detailed information regarding the army's progress and location. One player actually described the NPC sentries around the camp.
The only thing Jason could think was that the players simply didn't take him seriously and didn't anticipate much resistance from the Twilight Throne.
Either that, or no one had yet considered how important tactics were in waging a war in AO.
I really don't have any choice but to take the fight to them now. They're basically begging me to attack them with this kind of intel. Wow, this is amazing, Frank. Thank you.
You're more than welcome, Frank said. However, remember that you owe me some damned footage this time. Otherwise, I'm going to find you and make you give it to me.
Jason chuckled. I'll remember, don't worry. I'll talk to you later, Frank.
Bye, man.
As Jason terminated the call, he stood for a moment and stared at his core. The information on the forum post was incredibly useful. He knew it would give him an edge, so he read further down the thread, gleaning any information he could find. After he had finished reading, he tapped core off and lay back on his bed, staring at the ceiling. He had lain in this exact same position a couple days before, his mind in turmoil as he tried to process what had happened at Richmond and with his parents. He knew that those things had only happened a few days before, but they seemed much more distant. Jason had changed a lot over the last couple days, or week in-game. The thought of Alex or his parents just didn't seem to upset him the way it had in the past. He had been admitted to a new school, he had some money in his pocket, and he had even laughed and joked around with Angie tonight. He also had something to fight for. He had created the Twilight Throne from the ashes of his rage and pain. He had the potential to turn it into something incredible. The city was still in its infancy, and they would probably lose this war. But Jason was going to make certain that every single one of the players and NPCs in Alexion's army regretted stepping foot near his city. Jason grinned and pulled the helmet over his head. This next part was going to be fun.
Chapter 27 Slaughtered.
Riley was sitting in her usual spot in front of the campfire. Yet instead of watching the flames, she stared at the impenetrable darkness that ringed the camp. She thought she had heard something moving in the gloom. Dismissing the sound as a figment of her imagination, she turned her attention back to the fire. Over the last few days, the cloud cover had thickened until it completely blotted out the sun. Black clouds now constantly boiled in the sky, and flashes of lightning could be seen arcing through the clouds. There was no longer a day and night cycle, just perpetual darkness. Alexion had ordered the troops to bring out torches and keep moving forward. The flickering flames illuminated the road and cast long menacing shadows into the dense forest on either side. The claw-like branches of the trees hung over the road, bending and creaking in the wind. Both the players and NPC seemed uneasy with the constant darkness, as the reality of what they were doing suddenly struck them. They were attacking an undead city in the heart of its kingdom. Riley didn't share their fear. In contrast to the known evil that rode beside her, the uncertain danger that the darkness carried didn't seem that frightening. To avoid any accidental encounters with Alexion, she had begun wandering the forests in the evenings. After two nights, she had obtained the night vision skill, and her eyesight had become sharper. The road and surrounding forest no longer seemed so foreboding. The group had stopped for the night and set up camp in a large clearing in the forest. The NPCs had prepared their own camp as they usually did, and the players made a half-hearted attempt at lighting a few campfires. Most of the players then logged off to take care of real-world necessities. From her position by the campfire, Riley could see Alexion speaking with the NPC commanders a few yards away. She was able to overhear their conversation, despite the distance. A small group of weary soldiers stood behind the leaders and shifted uneasily.
"We need to post sentries along the tree line," said one of the NPC commanders to Alexion. "It is clear that we are getting closer to the Twilight Throne. We need to be cautious."
The NPC motioned at the darkened sky as he made this last point.
"The darkness makes it harder to see. We will require more men to ensure we have a complete perimeter set up around the clearing. It would be helpful if you could lend some of the travelers to help."
Alexion gazed steadily at the NPC and smirked haughtily. "I appreciate your input, but my people cannot be spared. Besides, do you really anticipate an attack in these woods? We have nearly 1,500 soldiers here. Would the undead really be foolish enough to attack us in an open clearing?" The NPC looked a bit put off by this response, and his colleague jumped in with an irritated tone.
"Your arrogance will get us all killed. We know nothing about this traveler Jason or the capabilities of the undead city. We don't even know how large an army we face."
Alexion chuckled. "I have my own spies in the so-called Twilight Throne. Their army is a fraction the size of mine, and the last I heard it was still garrisoned at the city. I think we can sleep soundly tonight." His gaze moved to the haggard band of soldiers. "This group should be fine. Perhaps they could use the time to nap." "A leader should give more respect to his troops," Riley thought. "He treats them like idiots." It was clear to her that Alexion had bought into the explanation that Jason had conquered Lux through an event quest. She thought that seemed unlikely. From what she had seen so far, AO didn't offer much hand-holding. Riley felt that Jason shouldn't be underestimated, and Alexion was a fool for not listening to his men. He was too cavalier with the lives of the NPCs and was quickly losing their respect. They didn't respawn. It may just be a game to him, but for them, it was their lives at risk. How he had managed to secure command of this army, she had no idea. She wasn't a tactical genius, but what the NPC commanders had said made sense. After Alexion had concluded his conversation with the NPC leaders, they marched off, grumbling. He waved at the small contingent of soldiers, and they fanned out around the clearing. Based on the direction each man was headed, Riley could see that there were large holes in the perimeter around the camp. She rolled her eyes and turned back to the fire. A couple hours later, the NPC and player camps had quieted down. The NPCs had long since fallen asleep, and nearly all of the players had logged off for the evening. Riley sat alone, gazing at the flickering flames of the campfire. She hadn't felt like taking her usual evening stroll. Suddenly she caught sight of movement in her peripheral vision. She looked over to see a black cat approaching from the darkness. As he neared Riley, she could see that the cat's eyes glowed silver. Her brow furrowed in confusion as she watched the cat amble up to her.
"What are you doing here, kitty?"
she asked the cat. The only response offered was a soft purr as the cat rubbed itself against her legs. She shook her head at the oddity of a cat roaming a desolate forest and gently pulled it onto her lap. Riley petted the cat absent-mindedly as she turned her attention back to the campfire. Ever since she had spoken to the old man a couple nights ago, the events that had led her to this place played endlessly in her mind. As she rehashed the same events over and over, the guilt, shame, and anger that flowed through her veins seemed to magnify. She hated Alex. If this silly war was so important to him, she desperately wanted to see this journey end in disaster and his dreams crushed. She hoped that Jason would succeed and that she could somehow be strong enough to help. As she was considering these macabre thoughts, she heard the first screams echo from the NPC camp. She turned in confusion, but couldn't see anything due to the distance and dim lighting. Maybe her wish was coming true. Indecision racked her. Was this her chance? Should she help the undead? Was she even able to help? As the screams grew louder and the sounds of battle washed over the clearing, the doubt and uncertainty won the war that raged in her head. She continued to sit stroking the cat. In her weakness, she had chosen to do nothing. Again, shame and guilt curled and coiled in her stomach. Jason was sitting in a tree to the southeast of Alexion's army. He was mulling over how best to attack the army in the clearing. His minions had carefully scouted the enemy encampment, and he had personally made a full circle around the camp to get a sense of the terrain. The army had stopped for the night in a large clearing encircled by dense forest on three sides. The roadway lay to the north of the glade. The NPCs had split off from the players and established a formal camp. Rows of tents were arranged in a complicated pattern, and campfires were located at regular intervals. From his position in the tree, Jason could make out larger tents in the center of the camp. He assumed that the tents housed the administrative personnel and likely some kind of kitchen. On the north side of the camp near the road, the NPCs had used the supply wagons to form a makeshift corral to stable the animals. In contrast, the players had prepared a token set of campfires a few dozen feet from the NPC camp. The player camp was located on the east side of the clearing, nearly 100 yards from the eastern tree line. Since it was now the fifth day of their journey, the enthusiasm of the players had apparently waned, and most had logged off during the in-game night. Finding Alexion's army had been the easy part. The players in the army had continued to post information and videos describing in almost nauseating detail the progress of the army. However, it had still taken nearly a full in-game day for Jason to make it to the enemy camp. Jason had a reasonable amount of endurance and had spent much of the journey traveling at a brisk jog. He only stopped every so often to regenerate his stamina. Since he and his minions did not need to sleep, and had no trouble seeing in the dark, they had made excellent time. Despite their progress, Jason now only had 2 in-game days until the army reached the Twilight Throne. The large amount of running through the dark forest had allowed him to gain 2 points of endurance, and he had leveled up his night vision once more. ×2 skill rank up night vision. Skill level beginner level 7. Effect 16% increased vision in darkness or near darkness.
"Well, this is just great," Jason murmured sarcastically as he surveyed the army in the clearing. He wasn't certain he had fully understood how many people and animals made up a 1,500-person army. It was a little intimidating.
"This seems impossible." Looking around the tree he was sitting in, he noticed that Onyx was mysteriously absent.
The cat had made the run without difficulty, and then had disappeared. I'm sure Onyx can take care of himself. I bet he's off sleeping in a tree somewhere. Lazy, judgmental cat. Shaking his head, Jason turned his attention back to the enemy camp. He reviewed his troops and their positions. His thieves and night children sat huddled below him at the base of the tree, while his guard zombies and the mages were farther back in the woods. During the journey, Jason converted one of his zombie guards into a lieutenant, and he had formed a separate unit of the guards and mages. The sustained mana cost was painful. He was left with only 2,800 mana. But he had realized while traveling from the Twilight Throne that his guards didn't have any real stealth abilities. This meant that they would need to be his rear guard, and would require someone to oversee them when Jason wasn't present. Jason had also taken the time while they were traveling to educate his new lieutenant on various types of tactics and explain his role. He had come up with a few defensive actions the rear guard should take in an emergency, and assigned the maneuvers to certain keywords that Jason could use telepathically. Right now, the rear guard was stationed farther south, away from the enemy camp. They would create a defensive perimeter if Jason and his other stealthier minions needed to retreat. His eyes panned back to the southern tree line. His thieves had already identified the sentries that ringed the camp. Using sneak, he had managed to creep close enough to the soldiers to inspect them. He discovered that they were each approximately level 110. If this was representative of the other soldiers in the army, then the fledgling undead force in the Twilight Throne was in serious trouble. What surprised Jason was the number of sentries, or the lack thereof. Judging from the state of the camp's defenses, Alexion clearly expected Jason to hole up in the Twilight Throne and wait for his army to show up. In fact, after some hand-wringing, Jason had decided to leave the fledgling army back at the city. They needed more time to grow in strength, and Jason was somewhat worried that Alex would hire someone to roll an undead character to spy on him. It didn't look like Alexion had considered the practicalities of fighting a war in AO. If he lost any players, they would respawn back at Greykeep and would be out of the fight. If he lost any NPCs, they died permanently. He should have taken steps to better protect his NPCs, and he shouldn't have allowed the majority of his players to log off simultaneously. Arrogant and stupid. How am I going to do this with such a small force? He murmured. He had 40 minions, and he was facing nearly 1,500 soldiers. Obviously, a straightforward attack was out of the question. There was also only so much his thieves could accomplish by killing the sleeping soldiers. A camp this large would still have some people moving around during the evening. It was only a matter of time before the thieves were discovered. His fingers drummed against the rough bark of the branch he sat on, as his mind searched desperately for some strategy that didn't end in his death. He knew that this was his chance to make a serious dent in the enemy forces. He needed to wipe out a sizable portion of the NPC army as quickly as possible before he was detected. If Jason could also slow the army by damaging supplies and vehicles, he could give his fledgling army another day to prepare. After this attack, Alexion likely wouldn't give Jason another opening. He would post better sentries and keep a force of players in-game to protect the camp. This attack needs to be devastating. I also need to distract them somehow and take out the wagons that make up the corral. A glimmer of a plan flashed through Jason's mind, causing a grin of anticipation to creep across his face. His plan probably wasn't going to work.
But if it did?
He felt the familiar chill crawl up his spine and settle in his brain. It had been a while since he had a chance to see some combat. He hadn't realized until now how much he had missed it.
Maybe I'm turning into a psychopath, he thought with a chuckle.
With a telepathic command, Jason moved his mage group to the north side of the camp.
He then dropped from the tree, landing with a soft thump that would have even impressed Onyx. Jason began giving detailed instructions to his thieves and night children. The thieves would slip into the camp and kill as many as possible while